From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. Today, 1,000 and another 1,000 and another 1,000 is our lead.
This morning, with nearly every state in the nation relaxing at least some restrictions, the U.S. reaching a grim milestone. 1.5 million cases of COVID, with the death toll nearing 90,000.
The U.S. death toll stands at 88,101. The CDC projected today it'll be at 100,000 by June 1st.
Earlier this year, we struggled to comprehend the ominous arithmetic of the nascent pandemic. But we don't need projections for big numbers anymore. We have them. So we compare old losses with new ones by the numbers.
Well, each day, we are seeing 1,000 or 2,000 people dying as if we're having a new 9/11 every 2 days.
I'd like to say that's two, 747s a day, maybe three a day of passengers who would be dying. That's what the coronavirus is doing, and I don't like to present.
It's the rough equivalent of 32 Hurricane Marias, 43 Johnstown floods, 565 Oklahoma City bombings, 650 Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fires, with at least 34 more to come by month's end. But even those scales are too abstract. Maybe to really take the measure of this pandemic, we simply have to count one by one.
Julia Rivera Collazo, 73, Bronx, New York. Gladys Hernandez, 75, Bronx, New York. Victor Olivero, 60, Bronx, New York. Mary Bello, 86, Manhattan. Sarita Burkett, 44.
On Wednesday, a group of people who've lost loved ones and faith leaders joined in a 24-hour online vigil called Naming the Lost. Though, as Casey Sepp pointed out in The New Yorker last week, reading all the names of all the Americans who we know have died would take at least 3 days. And that assumes there's a list, and there isn't. The City is a nonprofit news site covering New York City, and it plans to build a list, at least here in the epicenter. It aims to turn statistics into names and ultimately into an archive of obituaries for nearly every New Yorker killed by this disease. Because, as the City and its partners have found, the obituaries so far fail to accurately represent the dead. Too many people, too many communities are missing.
We want to find a way where every person has, 20 lines, 20 words, three paragraphs of their life that makes them unique to their family and makes them unique to New York.
Terry Paris Jr. is the engagement editor of the City.
We're trying to crowdsource stories. We will rely on social shoe leather journalism. We're going to call every single funeral home. We will be partnering with various local news organizations, some of which will be in different languages. And we're also going to be translating this ourselves into Spanish, Korean, and Yiddish. It will take a year or so, who knows, but we want to figure out a way to track as many of those deaths, as many of those people, talk to as many of those families as we possibly can.
A lot of these deaths happen in hospitals that are overrun, at home, in the loneliest parts of society. I mean, this has to present a hurdle that's hard to overcome.
My heart just sunk when you said that, because it is such an enormous project. It is such an enormous hurdle. And so we want to sort of be investigative reporters and be incredibly empathic with what we're doing and figure out the best ways to reach those folks. And we, for example, have a list of deaths on Hearts Island, but we don't exactly know where they're all coming from, or we have their names and their, last known addresses.
I'm guessing that you have a lot of lists, right? I mean, lists from the Hasidic Community News, lists from unions, the United Federation of Teachers. A lot of groups keep track of their own.
This is exactly right. COVID, in terms of thinking about the deaths, have made lists upon lists upon lists, and they're all in different places. We wanted to tie these all together and make basically this clearinghouse and bring all of these names and all of these faces and all of these stories into one place? How do we make these lists publicly available? How can they be searched? How can they be grouped? How can the display be something that is sophisticated and honorable for what we're losing? Just like folks who have come to New York to volunteer in the healthcare industry, to come out of retirement in some cases, we want reporters to help us tell these stories, to sort of give back in the ways that we know they want to. Immediately publishing this story, got dozens of emails from reporters asking me exactly this. How can I volunteer my time to help tell these stories?
Now, what do you mean by tell these stories? Do you mean write an obituary?
We mean reach out to this family, talk to the person who knows about the taxi driver or the MTA conductor, the longtime Little League coach. Create some memorial of an obituary that isn't 20 lines and costs $150, that isn't a string of words separated by semicolons, but are full sentences. There is this disproportionate skew towards wealthier folks in wealthier neighborhoods. If you look at the obituaries, they're cost prohibitive. In the New York Daily News, an obituary can cost $600. The New York Times, at the cheapest, it's $250, and that gets a one-day run in the paper and on digital. With so many folks dying right now, and with the terms of grief changing so dramatically, we believe that something like this might just help us better come to terms. You know, it's a big project, but it's a small little thing that we as journalists might be able to do to help folks better celebrate that taxi driver or that MTA conductor or that longtime Little League coach.
How much trouble do laws on privacy, especially health privacy, HIPAA restrictions and so forth, pose in this effort?
We are not encouraging doctors or those who may be working with families in a social work capacity or a therapy capacity to share the names. We're merely asking them to share this information with their networks in the hopes that those folks might want to participate.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, as the names come in, we have an army of folks. It's a small army, but it's an army nonetheless, of folks who are proactively reaching out to these groups. We are asking in our call out the name, the age, when they died, something that makes them unique, if they have any underlying conditions. As the names come in, we call people or email people and we'll verify these items. This doesn't go right from the submitted form to the internet in public. We're journalists, we trust but verify, and that's what we'll be doing with this project too.
You talked about your army that isn't very big. Exactly. How big is it? I mean, how close do you think you can get to meeting your goal? Because even as you address the numbers, they keep going up.
Right now, we have slotted between 5 to 10 researchers, postgrad fellows, and interns. The phase two component of asking reporters to help us verify and report out these stories has not happened yet. And so we hope that dozens would sign on to this, but we will see where we get through this summer, and then we'll have to figure out a way to increase the size of that army for the fall and for the spring and through next summer, because it's not something that's going to happen within the next 6 months. These numbers are going to keep going up. We're not done. We're not out of the woods yet.
Why do this? I mean, I know the New York Times is making an effort to feature people who are beloved in their communities but are not famous or rich or even white. It's a drop in the bucket, I know. So many people will be overlooked. What drives you?
Not from COVID, but my mother and brother passed away within a year of each other. And one of them got an obituary and one of them didn't. And even in that obituary was a handful of sentences and a bunch of semicolons. And I really believe that that does not do anyone justice. There's a full life lived, and 20 words at $100 is not a full life. Oftentimes, we look to the media, to TV and newspapers for validations of a life well lived. And when that is hard for lots of people to attain, particularly in a time like this, that feels bad. That feels unjust. I think sometimes we forget who we're serving and we forget why we're serving them. you see some really great things happen, but you also see people being left behind when it comes to news and information and story. I think this is the project that could help us think differently about who we're trying to reach and why we're trying to reach them.
There was a piece in the Washington Post earlier this week titled, "This Feels Great." And it described a mall in suburban Atlanta where people were delighted to return to quote-unquote normal. As one man put it, when you start seeing where the cases are coming from and the demographics, I'm not worried.
Mm-hmm. When I saw that, I had to close my computer and it was like, this is why we're doing this. Because there's this sort of callousness because we just see the number. And that man's quote, it's just heartbreaking to hear and see something like that when so many people are losing so many loved ones to this disease. And frankly, who will just be forgotten. It's yet another example of why this project is so important.
To end the isolation?
To absolutely end this isolation.
Terry, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time, Brooke.
Terry Paris Jr. is the engagement editor for The City.
Coming up, can we mourn as a nation anymore?
This is On the Media.